Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton, author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, and you are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. This season of Radio Cherry Bomb is presented by Kerrygold. Kerrygold's pure Irish butter is made with milk from grass-fed cows. The rich, nuanced flavor makes it perfect for all your baking and cooking needs. Our guests are nodding their heads. Hopefully they're Kerrygold fans. It's a taste that says 1,000 words, including, it's the bomb. So, tonight is the finale of Top Chef Season 14, and you know what that means. There will be a new top chef in the world. The two contestants vying for the title are Chef Brooke Williamson and Chef Shirley Chung, and I am so pleased we have them in the studio to give us the lowdown. Brooke is the co-chef and co-owner of Hudson House, The Triple, Playa Provisions, and DeKiko in Los Angeles. DeKiko Kiko. Got it right. Shirley, meanwhile, is the co-owner of Steamers Company, a seafood restaurant set to open in Los Angeles later this year. Brooke, Shirley, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hi. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
How are you both?
Doing great.
I'm super excited to be here.
Yes, me too.
Cherry Bomb is definitely top on my list of publications that I'm excited to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, thank you. We're thrilled you're both here, and I'm really happy you could squeeze this into your schedules because you two are like the toast of the town right now.
For the day.
They told me what they've
today,
been
tomorrow.
Running around to hair salons. Shout out to the people at Sally Hirschberger and who did your hair. You'll have to look at Brooke's Instagram. To know her hair is partially purple and French braided. It's pretty fabulous.
Thank you.
And you two hit the Spotted Pig.
Yep. Employees only last night.
Yeah.
For drinks.
We hit a few places yesterday.
Yeah.
Did you close anywhere down?
I don't think we did.
No.
I'm impressed with us for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Self-control.
I mean, it was pretty good. I don't know that it was my decision to leave.
So the big question is, how are you two doing?
Good.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, let me get this straight. One of you is the winner, uh-huh. and one of you is not the winner, uh-huh. and you two are doing your best to not reveal this to the world, right?
Yeah. I mean,
we'll find out tonight.
It's not that hard. We've been keeping that a
since July
for a few months.
Since July.
So, yeah.
Okay. Do you, and I mean, I guess you have the cast and each other to talk to about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a giant chat group.
We have our families.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like the rest of the world doesn't want to be spoiled. People want to see that.
You want
it for
the surprise. Yeah. You want to see the whole production. Don't want to ruin the end.
It's a good surprise, unlike elections, for example.
No.
Right? That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's a win-win situation right now.
Now, both of you happen to be returning contestants. So there was a little twist this season. Half of the contestants returned and half were Top Chef virgins.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to come back and give it another shot?
You want,
sure.
I feel like Top Chef has given me so many opportunities that I can directly attribute to having done Top Chef. Not only that, but it's a period of time where you literally get to focus on food. And nothing but food, for better or for worse. And it's really refreshing to be able to do that once in a while. And when else do you get to do that?
Yeah.
Now, Brooke, I don't remember why Padma said, pack your knives and go, but why did she tell you that?
Because I made the worst dish of the day. it was just one of those days where everyone made perfect food and my food wasn't perfect, and it was unfortunate, but ended up for the better.
Yeah.
Did you say to yourself, I wish I could go back one day?
Are you talking about packing my knives the first time?
Mm-hmm.
I actually never heard those words.
Oh.
I made it to the finale.
Yeah. They don't do that. They don't say that, right?
They don't say the loser pack your knives and go. They just say the winner congratulations.
Is.
So returning, yeah, I mean, I, you know, I didn't necessarily feel like I had anything to like prove to anyone. It was basically, you know, just a way of continuing on with something that I felt like was really beneficial to my life.
And Shirley, how about you?
Yeah, well, I'm the same way. I want to say Top Chef, it was life-changing, especially the first time for me. It was not only helping my career, but it's like helped me grow as a chef. The experience like make you super focus on your craft, and then you really don't think, you don't have a chance to think about anything else, but just focus at the moment. So I feel it sort of pushed the best out of you. And then after Top Chef, be able to open my own restaurant really quickly. And then, so when they asked me to join them again, I cannot turn down this great opportunity. But definitely it was like a long process for me to decide. I was really anxious. I wasn't sure if this is the right choice because I done well my season as well. So it's sort of like my pride, but at the same time, like, what am I afraid of? I need to be fearless, and this is what I'm going to do. So I'm not going to miss on this opportunity. Plus, later on, I found out that who's returning. They sort of like did this to us. I was like, oh, my friend. I was like, Brooke is going back. Oh, and Casey? Oh. Then make me, I was like, wow, I got to play with them and cook with them and live with them. It's going to be so much fun. So it was just, that really made me make the solid decision.
I don't think any of us off the bat said, yes, yeah, I'll go back.
Sheldon did.
Sheldon, and, yeah, and I'm sure Katsuji did. But
and John, probably.
And maybe John. But so, but probably several of us thought to ourselves, should we do this again? Could I, you know, I'm putting myself in a position where I could
potentially worse,
be eliminated a lot earlier than I was the first time. But, you know, it's also, I think that people who like to compete inherently, like,
yes,
who are inherently competitive, it's kind of an adrenaline rush that you can't get any other way.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you're naturally competitive, what other outlets are there for you as a chef?
Yeah. I was an athlete when I was young.
Were you?
Yeah.
So Shirley, you didn't tell us, did you make it to the very end or did Padma
tell
you?
Number three.
So you heard.
So I heard the word. Surely. And she was, she has tears in her eye. Uncle Emeril was there. Like
Uncle
everybody.
Emeril.
Yeah, everybody was, I was, yeah, that was difficult.
How did you take it?
I think, I'm pretty sure I cried at the spa. Yeah. Because it was hard, and then it was like natural disaster. All my mise en place got blew away. It was just thunderstorm because we're cooking outside. So it was bad. It was a bad day. So I really felt I didn't cook the best at the same time. So I was mad at myself, and yeah.
Aw.
That's frustrating.
Yeah.
So let's jump to the season. You two were actually roommates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did you plan that?
I don't think we did.
No.
I mean, we both like kind of landed in a bedroom when we walked in. And
we kicked Katsuji out.
Yeah, Katsuji had already staked claim on a bed. And I said, you know what?
This is girl's room.
This room has the best bathroom of the house.
I had
Katsuji, get your
get your stuff.
You can
get your shit off the bed.
We're taking over this.
Over. This is our bathroom. This is a women's bathroom.
Yep.
So that's
what happened.
Why we ended up with that room.
Yeah. And then we kind of lost a roommate. Started off with three girls, and then we lost a roommate, and then it was just me and her for 5 weeks.
So aside from the obvious, I'm going to ask, what's been the best thing about the season? I mean, obviously one of you won, and that's the best thing. But what else were some of the highlights for you?
I know it sounds cheesy, but I really feel like the friendship that we develop is because we're chefs. We're really busy. It's hard for us to, like, when we're running restaurants, it's hard for us to have personal time. Like, we don't even spend enough time with our family members. So it's hard to have friends outside of your restaurant. And so when all this great, like, similar mind come together and you live in the house and every day you cook together and you get to see each other's technique and you talk about everything, it's like such amazing feeling.
Yeah, it's strange. I feel like I can go to almost any city in this country and
they're friends.
Have a friend there.
Yeah.
And know someone there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a really interesting thing if you think about the fact I've cooked in Los Angeles my whole life. and why would I know someone in Oklahoma who, you know, a chef, unless I did events with them but now I actually feel like I have friends all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say was the hardest part of this season?
Being away from my son for such an extended period of time.
How old is he?
He's 9 now. It was actually a lot harder the first time because he was 4 then, and he couldn't quite wrap his head around why I wasn't coming home. And it was really hard to think about the fact that he could potentially think I was never coming home. I know. It was heartbreaking on a daily basis. And now, at least this time, he gave me his blessing. He understood what was going on. And I felt like I had his support, but still, you know, missing school stuff and not being a mom for 7 weeks is painful when it's part of your everyday world.
Like for me, it's because I just opened, well, then we're coming on to the second year of opening 28, my last restaurant. And so it was very hard for me to leave at that time because also, like, it was Orange County. We're always shorthanded, and I hate to leave my chef de cuisine by himself running the whole kitchen. We always have so many events. So it was really difficult for me to not to be able, not only leaving them, but not to be able to communicate every single day just to know what's going on in the restaurant. It was, like, killing me.
The leaving the child behind is tough, though.
And
so tell us about the whole process. So it's 7 weeks. Are you allowed to use your phones, internet?
Sporadically.
Yeah. And do people monitor what you're doing?
100%. Wow. Always monitoring.
You don't actually have your phone on you. Maybe are given a phone
call. A speaker phone. On tape.
They would check your email once a week or something.
Yeah.
But you're really removed from your everyday life. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, it's better that way.
So you don't focus
have the outside distractions of things that might be going wrong at home. Or
are you told what's going on in the world?
No,
wow.
Not at all.
So it's like shocker when we come out. We're like, what happened?
Yeah. We didn't even realize that we were about to go shopping in a hurricane until like that morning.
Yeah, because we don't know the weather report.
We
don't have weather report. We'll going to do this running around downtown Charleston with this thunderstorm going on, possibly a hurricane.
We heard it was a tropical storm, and it was everything's kind of secondhand.
I mean, you two knew what you were getting into, so I guess it's more the first time you do it that it's more the shock.
The lack of control of everything or knowledge of anything that's about to happen. And then the second time you just kind of
expect
to not expect anything.
Yeah. Just prepared to roll with it. Like, we rather not know what's going on. We literally stop guessing what the challenges are. And then, like, the
Because there's no point.
Yeah, exactly. And then new blow will go, what do you think? We're like, we don't know. Like, no, seriously, we really don't know.
Don't know. Just tell us.
Yeah.
And how was Charleston?
It's a beautiful city.
It's great.
You know, we didn't experience it like most people would.
Yeah.
It's funny,
so
the way it's edited, it looks like
we saw a lot of really cool things.
Yeah.
But we didn't get to eat.
Yeah. Really,
so. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the wine and food festival is this weekend in Charleston.
I'm sad. Lots of friends there this week.
Yeah.
I'll be there. I'm sad you two won't be there. But maybe next year, right?
That'll be great.
So what else about the process? So you're kind of locked away for 7 weeks, and are you on camera the whole time?
No. I mean,
you know when you're on camera and when you're not.
There's no surprise.
Oh, there's no secret cameras or stuff like that. And they will let you know, so we're coming back house to shoot reality. And sometimes we bargain with them. We're like, 20 minutes. They're like, no, 30 minutes. And we're like, we behave. And, you know, everybody keep talking instead of like going back to the bathroom and hide out so we can shoot shorter reality. Then we can all relax after the team leaves. So.
And are they really long days?
Yeah. Back to back.
How do you deal with sleep deprivation and stuff like that?
There's a lot of like sleeping in cars and sleeping sitting up in a fold-out chair.
Sleeping on the carpet.
Floor.
Yeah.
You kind of take a nap when you can because you never really know
what's
you're
going
to be able to go to sleep or what time you're going to get up.
Yeah. And how about the vanity factor? I mean, you're there with Gail and Padma and they get hair and makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get hair and makeup?
No,
we do our own.
They don't care what we look like.
Do you just
makeup just melt on our faces?
Yeah, you have to realize that yes, this is a competition. The most important part is cooking the food, but you also don't want to look terrible. So, like, Shirley and I kind of made a point of putting on some makeup in the
every
morning.
Yeah.
But it's hard after a long challenge, you know.
Touch up.
Yeah,
we don't touch
just
up.
Sweats off.
Yeah. So we see, like, the beginning was, like, look gray. And then the next shot, it's like everything was already sweat off. It was hot. And
looking back on it, I mean, watching the show and people are like, oh, my God, it must have been so hot in there. Look how sweaty you are. I have to just, I stopped caring. You know, I did my best to look, but you know what? It is what it is.
Yeah. After 7 weeks, I would guess you stopped caring, right?
Oh, no, I'm just saying watching it.
We're like, there's nothing we can do.
There at this point.
Yeah, we try our best to put makeup on, but they're not staying in our face, and it's all right.
So I was talking to Kristen Kish this morning, and I didn't realize, were you and Kristen the...
We were the
yes.
You were the final two on season 10. Wow. So Kristen, you know, was on our cover, and as Brooke just said, she was the winner of season 10. I asked Kristen for some questions to ask you, and she said, ask what you both ate off camera.
Off camera? Oh, like what we fed ourselves for 7 weeks? I ordered a case of cup of noodles. I ate a cup of noodles, I think, one a day.
Wait, when you say you ordered it, you have to plan
Our handlers.
You tell the PAs or someone going to the market
to buy
what you would like to eat in the house. I don't, you know, the last thing I felt like doing when we came home was cooking a meal. So we asked for a rice cooker.
So we have sushi rice starting in the morning. So when we go home, is always hot rice.
Rice with soy sauce and kimchi.
Kimchi.
And cup of noodles. That's pretty much what I lived on. Mm. Avocado toast in the morning.
Avocado, yeah, that was healthy. Oh, fruit snacks for vitamins.
So many fruit snacks.
Oh, and then for me, it's bananas. Like, I cannot live without them. So, like,
Shirley had a banana in her back pocket at all times.
I did.
Is that a banana in your pocket?
Yes.
And then, did either of you have any little rituals or lucky charms? Not the leprechaun cereal. Like, good luck charms.
I have a little. A rubber salamander, like lizard, that I keep in my pocket, or I kept while competing in my pocket at all times. It was actually a good luck charm that my son gave me when I was leaving for Seattle the first time that I did Top Chef, and it remained my lucky charm, and I literally would not go to a challenge without that in my pocket.
Very true. I see her holding it. Every time she gets nervous, you see her hand goes to the back, and she starts doing this.
I would love it.
Yeah, that was like, well, I know Brooke is nervous.
Did you ever lose it?
No, but I did have it tattooed on my arm just in case.
Oh, that's awesome.
I have a tattoo of the lizard on my arm.
Well, mine is this. So this is a Jade Buddha my mom got me, and also blessed by a monk. Is the Buddha I'm supposed to pray to. And so I've been wearing it for many, many years. So this is always my lucky charm.
Wow. That's so cool. We will be right back after this word from our sponsor, Kerrygold, and we will talk with Brooke and Shirley about their restaurants, their careers, and their post-Top Chef plans. Do you have any fun baking projects planned for this weekend? Be sure to add Kerrygold Pure Irish Butter to your grocery list. Whether you're trying your hand at 4-20 Blackbird's famous pie crust recipe, Dory Greenspan's chocolatey world peace cookies, or Hot Bread Kitchen's garlic naan with green chili, you need quality butter to make these recipes the best they can be. Kerrygold's milk comes from grass-fed cows that graze up to 300 days, making it perfect for all your sweet and savory baking needs. You'll soon know why so many bakers and pastry chefs love Kerrygold butter. Welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. We're here with chefs Brooke Williamson and Shirley Chung. One of these chefs will be the top chef tonight on the season finale, not America's Next Top Model. So we were joking earlier, but
that's
America's Next Top Chef. Well, if you set your mind to it, you can
do anything.
Maybe do anything. Exactly.
I need to grow taller.
Get some braids.
One thing we didn't talk about during the whole process and being locked away thing was that, so you two were roommates, we know that much, but you had bunk beds.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's like camp.
I slept on the top bunk by choice, and I loved it. Because I never had a bunk bag, and then growing up, I always wanted one. So now I have the opportunity to sleep on a bunk bed. I need to go top bunk.
Shirley's a really restless sleeper. So
I'm sorry.
being below Shirley for many, 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 many weeks was quite an experience.
And I refused to move down. And then later on, we have a bed actually became available in our room. Brooke is like, so Shirley, you want to move to that bed? I'm like, no, I'm superstitious. I'm doing well on top bunk, so I'm staying here.
Yeah. So we were literally the only two people in a decent sized room and sleeping in a bunk bed still.
So let's talk about your individual career. So Shirley, you said you did not have a bunk bed where you grew up. So tell us where you grew up.
So I was born and raised in Beijing, China. I came to United States, Northern California when I was 17. Completed 1 year of high school and followed by 4 year college, working in Silicon Valley for like almost 5 years.
All right, let me stop you for 1 second because 17 is a really hard age.
Yeah.
But to pick up from an entirely different country, culture, you name it, and to come to America, what was that like?
It was difficult at the beginning because when I first came to America, even though it was Bay Area, we didn't have a lot of Chinese. So it was definitely a big culture shock. And then fortunately, because I learned English when I was in China, so I can read and write. I just couldn't speak as well. As much as I love to talk, can you imagine that I cannot speak the language? So that drove me crazy. So I sort of made myself learn fairly quickly. And then I think it sort of built me as a person, helped me grow. And then I think because of that, I'm very easy to fit in a lot of environments. So I guess I have to be thankful for that.
Why did your family move here?
Long story. Started my grandparents' generation. My grandfather is Chinese American. He was born in Ventura County. My dad was born in New York. My grandmother was this Chinese scholar that married my grandfather, but she was Chinese national. So my family has always been Chinese American circulating immigrants. My grandparents took my parents, moved back to China in 1949, and then my dad had a great career in China, working for government, technology sector. 1989 Tiananmen Square, he vocally supported students, so he got kicked out of Communist Party. And then so he decided because he is a U.S. citizen, he wanted me to have a better future, so a better education, freedom of choice, most importantly. That's why we migrated to United States before I turned 18.
I mean, I'm guessing you didn't get a say in the decision, but were you upset?
Yes, definitely, because we live a really good life in Beijing, and then that's all I know. And then the school I went to is from elementary school all the way to high school. So all my friends, we've been friends since six. So it was really hard to leave that support group. But ultimately, I still think that I'm very thankful that my parents brought me out, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to have the career that I chose.
Did you know what was going on at the time with Tiananmen Square?
I do, because, that time I was 12, 13 years old, and my school actually had a lot of government executives, grandchildren and children going to school, myself included. So we have a lot of internal information, and then our school also got attacked by military.
Wow.
It was crazy. And then I witnessed dead people from Tiananmen Square rolling in front of my house, and my house also got shot at by tank.
Oh, gosh.
Because it was outside military coming into Beijing City that they don't know what is what. They even shot at Supreme Court because it was a giant gate. They see people moving, they just machine gunned it. It was crazy.
Mm. Are you an only child?
I was the only child. And then I came to America. My parents had my sister. So we're 18 years apart.
That's a big age gap.
Yes.
What does she do?
Well, she's now currently going to medical school. So she's fulfilling my mom's dream for her. Because my mom's a doctor.
You're both such low achievers. So when did food become an interest?
Always. Growing up, my grandmother, she was a director of Red Cross. So she traveled around the world, and she believed in introducing the world culture through food. So ever since I was young, like, she brought me cheese and chocolate, like, opened up my palate, taught me like English words. So when I was three, my English words always related to food. I know how to say ice cream, spaghetti, which is really weird, like spaghetti, and stinky feet is my word for cheese.
I was like, That's not a food item.
But that's like, so because I say stinky feet in Chinese, so my grandmother taught me to say stinky feet. That's how I go, can you buy some stinky feet back? My grandma said, you want me to bring some cheese back.
So you were telling us you did high school, then college, then Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the trajectory?
Yeah.
What were you doing in Silicon Valley?
Well, I was focused on semiconductor sector, high-tech sales, because that's my father does, and he has semiconductor company. So that was, since I flunked chemistry twice in college, so my mom realized that I cannot be a doctor. So my dad was like, okay, then be a businesswoman. So I went through the whole college thing, working in Silicon Valley for my parents, and then realized that's not what I like. I cannot sit in front of the table still for 8 hours. It just bore out of my mind, and I want to do something more fulfilling. I always love cooking, and I started to cook for myself when I was a young age, because my mom was so busy, and then cooking is not really on her mind. So I started making like top ramen noodles and fried rice. I'm really good at fried rice since like 7, 8 years old. I always interested in food. So later on, when we first came to America, my parents are so busy with their career. So I pick up cooking dinner. I really enjoyed it. But because I didn't really cook too much Chinese, so I was watching TV, Food Network TV, to learn how to cook American food. Like I watched Emeril, Julia Child, Ming Tsai, and Yan Can Cook. That's where I learned some basic Chinese initially, but it's so funny. My parents always will come home for dinner, like so I can welcome them with dinner. So later on, when I move away for college, my dad used to call me, go, hey. Normally, it's like, hey, can you come back? Your mom makes soup for you, like a traditional Chinese family would say. But my dad was like, hey, can you come back? I miss your lamb shank. Like, can you come back to braise some meat for me? Your mom be feeding me top ramen for like 2 weeks already.
Your parents were starving back home. How did you break it to them that you wanted to be a chef?
Ooh, that was hard. So it was good timing. It was beginning of 2000. The dot-com boom busted. So it was like 2002. My startup company was not surviving. So I was like, okay, I can lay myself off and get a severance package. That time now I'm dating my husband. And he's like, you want to take a pay cut? Because right now there's nothing available. Or why don't you do something fun, take a vacation or something, you hate your job anyways. And I was like, okay. And then I saw this culinary school commercial. I was like, oh, there's a culinary school in San Francisco? So I went to check it out just for fun, and then I signed up in 30 minutes. So I went to CCA, like literally I came back. Even my husband was really surprised, and he said, whoa, you really signed up? I was like, yeah. So when I broke it to my parents and they weren't really happy about it, well, they originally paid for my college. So my dad, the first thing my dad said, I'm not paying for that. I was like, oh, no, don't worry, Dad. Like, I have this plan out. I have severance package. I'm going to do this. And they weren't very happy about it. My mom, the first thing she said was like, why do you want to become a blue collar when you're a white collar? That's what she said. Yeah.
And now?
Slowly. I mean, they always love me and support me no matter what. And then now I understand as the parents, they just don't want you to work so hard. And then this is a hard life. And before that, I really didn't realize how much physical involvement this job would take. Before, I just loved cooking. But now, like, this is my passion. I understand you have to pay. There's burdens, but this is what we do. Otherwise, it's a hobby. It's not passion anymore, right?
And your new restaurant, tell us what it's all about and when we can all go.
Well, my new restaurant is going to be Los Angeles County. I want it to be near Brooke. No, she's been great. Like, cause she, you know, she's seasoned restaurant tour and definitely showing, because I've been executive chef. I open a lot of restaurants for other celebrity chefs. But just building a whole restaurant from the ground up, this is actually the first time without a partner. And that's also because me and my husband being on Top Chef together, I realized that we can actually work together. And he quite enjoyed working with me. That's why we decided to do this together. Because
you know, that was a 20-minute quickfire.
I know. He's an engineer. So we want something. I think we're at the stage of life that we want to have something together. We don't have children yet. So this is like sort of our children project-ish. I don't know. It's going to be not super casual, but definitely fast, fine concept. It's a counter service, raw bar and seafood bowl, steamed seafood bowl. So sustainable seafood, nice and healthy, and something I like to eat. Definitely fill into the comfort food.
Yes, you have a way you describe your specialty.
Bowl of hug.
And you said if you look up the hashtag bowl of hug,
it's all
you
mine.
Own that. Yes,
yes. I okay. do. Okay. Steamers and Company is going to own the hashtag bowl of hug.
But specifically, in case you don't know what kind of food bowl of hug is, what kind of food is bowl of hug?
Steamed seafood. So we have basically different sauces that you can pick from. A lot of it's California influence, but I definitely have a Chinese soul in it. So you see the California, the modern American over influence, but you can always taste that little bit Chinese flavor or ingredient or the feeling of Chinese in the food.
So modern American with a Chinese soul.
That's correct.
I love it. So Brooke.
Yes.
How did you get into food?
I don't even remember. So I knew at a very, very young age that I wanted to be a chef. And that was kind of always my kind of very linear sort of career. You know, by the time I was six, I was telling people I was going to be a chef.
So cute.
What was your specialty back then?
Pancakes. Yeah. We had a mulberry tree in our backyard that I used to go in, like, my parents slept in the mornings. And so Saturday and Sunday, I kind of had to entertain myself. I had a sister who was 6 years older, but it was a lot of entertaining myself. And
so wait, your parents slept in because?
Just because they like to sleep.
Oh, because you grew up in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe they had jobs.
Just Saturday and Sunday, they, you know, that was their day to like lay in bed all day. And I would go out and pick mulberries and make pancakes and experiment in the kitchen. And, you know, I grew up watching the cooking shows that were on TV when I was a child was Julia Child and The Galloping Gourmet and Jacques Pepin. And that's, you know, that's what I would watch instead of cartoons. And then I'd go in the kitchen and experiment. I loved going to the supermarket and walking up and down the aisles. Professionally, I didn't really start working in kitchens until I was about 17, 18.
Was high school hard since you knew what you wanted to do and you'd had to take these other classes? Did you think that was a total waste of time?
I didn't even have a home ec at my high school. No, I mean, school was what it was. I wasn't a huge student. I definitely had no desire to go to college, but my parents kind of I did so to make my parents happy because they didn't think that I would follow through on anything. I also wanted to be the first female baseball player. I wanted to be a professional ice skater. I had really high goals, but I never followed through with anything in life. I, you know, stayed home from school once a week, sick from a stomach ache. But I think, you know, so I went to a year of college and I came home and I got a job working for Ken Frank in LA at the Argyle Hotel. This was before he reopened La Toque in Napa. And he, you know, I had applied to the CIA and you needed to fulfill a certain number of restaurant hours to go there.
And everyone who's listening should know the CIA is the Culinary Institute of America.
Not the Central Intelligence Agency. Yes, the Culinary Institute. And so I got a job to fulfill those hours and ended up never leaving and worked my way up really quickly.
Do you feel that you missed anything by not going to culinary school?
No. I feel like it really actually catapulted my career in a way that I feel like I wouldn't have been able to do if I had gone to culinary school. I would have had a very different trajectory had I gone to culinary school. I just had to make a point of reading and educating myself and learning technique. You know, because it's very easy to work in a kitchen and not care about technique. So I staged a lot at places. I staged here in New York at Danielle. I made a point of really educating myself. And I probably moved up the ladder too quickly. I was very determined to be the best at every station I worked and move on to the next one. If I felt like I wasn't learning enough, I would move on to the next restaurant. But I was an executive chef by the time I was 22. I cooked my first James Beard dinner at the age of 22, and I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I did, but, you know, it's very strange to think about, you know, how quickly that happened.
For young chefs out there listening, or maybe aspiring chefs, how does one get to stage?
Don't be shy.
Yeah, ask.
Call. Ask friends.
I was fortunate enough to work at Michael's in Santa Monica. I became the sous chef there. And Michael McCarty, who also has a restaurant here in New York, was very good friends with Danielle. And I asked Michael to send me to New York. And he called his friend Danielle Ballou, and said, can my sous chef come and stage in your kitchen? He was like, yes, of course. So, you know, it's all about just asking the right people and not being embarrassed.
Mm-hmm. Just going for it. How did you wind up with so many restaurants?
I don't know. I feel like I constantly need a different outlet for different sides of creativity. You know, I have my husband and I own 4 restaurants right now, and they're all so different from each other. And I feel like, you know, even Playa Provisions in itself is 4 concepts. Seafood restaurant, whiskey bar, cafe, and creamery. And I feel like if I'm in the mood to make ice cream, I can make ice cream. If I feel like I have just made a beautiful ceviche dish, I have a menu to put that on. There's kind of always a place to put my mind.
And how did you make the leap from the kitchen to chef owner?
I actually ended up leaving a restaurant when I was 22, 23 years old. I left the restaurant that I was working at and started a catering company kind of in the interim of trying to figure out what I was going to do next. My husband and I started the catering company together, and then we started getting really busy, and we ended up needing to find a larger kitchen to cater out of, and we found a restaurant space, and then we ended up dropping the catering and opening a restaurant. I was 23 or 4 when my husband and I opened our first restaurant. And then we learned from a lot of mistakes. That restaurant was only open for about 2 years, but quickly moved on and realized we had to pick ourselves back up. And that was, you know, being a chef and having restaurants is the only thing I ever could imagine myself doing. So it's not like I was going to walk away.
Do you have anything new in the pipeline, like Shirley?
I have a culinary boutique right now. It's a culinary store. We sell cookbooks and cocktail ware and aprons and all sorts of knives, culinary related things. Definitely curated for, you know, specialty items. And we're moving that at the moment to an actual storefront with a beer and wine and coffee bar.
Tell us where.
It's actually in Playa Vista, right across the street from DeKiko Kiko. I'm maybe speaking too soon because I haven't signed the lease yet. But it is looking like that is what is about to happen. I don't know. I feel like my brain is never quite settled, and I'm always looking for the next project, maybe even my husband more so than myself. But I feel like I have my hands full at the moment, so I'm pretty satisfied with what's going on.
And how do you juggle being a mom and being a chef? That is not easy.
No,
with the hours that you have to keep.
It's not always graceful. I don't always feel like I'm around for every moment that I need to be. But, you know, he's 9 years old now, and he's really easy. He's spent his whole lives being in our restaurants. So mm-hmm. we have dinner at the restaurant instead of having dinner at home. And that feels like home to him. You know, I never wanted to be a parent who wasn't a hands-on, you know, parent putting their kid to sleep. And, so I'm very involved as much as I possibly can be. It's difficult when traveling quite a bit, but my husband really holds it down, and he's a great husband. He's a great father. And fortunately we work together. So there are a couple of us involved.
Well, you do have some good role models in Los Angeles. You've got Nancy Silverton.
Yeah.
You've got Suzanne Gowen. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of...
Suzanne has 3 kids. Mm-hmm.
A lot of working moms in that city.
Yeah.
On that note, we're going to the speed round. Ready? I'm going to throw out a little question and you two can both answer. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Tea.
You grabbed your phone.
Oh,
are you going to look? Are you going to look up the answers?
I'm going to look up the answer to the last question because I feel like you warned me about one question you're going to ask, and I need to say it properly.
Sweet or salty?
Salty.
Salty.
One food you would never eat.
Oh, would never.
Never?
There's nothing I would never eat. There, yeah. There's a food that I don't
like.
Like,
yeah.
Shiso. I hate
shiso. Really?
It's strange.
I wonder if it's like a, you know how like some people can't eat cilantro and it's actually a genetic thing?
I don't believe that.
No, it is. I did that 23andMe, where you spit into
really?
The vial. And one of the things they ask you is about cilantro because apparently it's genetic.
Oh, fine.
Some people genetically think it tastes like soap.
Yeah. That's how I feel about shiso.
For me, it's weird. It's cooked carrots.
Huh.
Baby carrots are better than regular size carrots, but if it's cooked, especially braised or glazed or those,
all right.
I don't.
Don't make Shirley any cooked carrots, people.
No.
You're on notice. If you were trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be?
Food celebrity?
Don't say each other.
Oh, man.
We're like looking at each other. I wasn't going to say you, Shirley.
I don't think we can survive. I need to pick someone that I can survive with this.
Oh, this is lightning. This is not sounding like lightning, is it? Who would you choose? Food celebrity.
First one that comes to mind. We had Ken Friedman from The Spotted Pig on last week, and he was like, well, maybe I need to have babies with them so we can populate the island.
Jacques Pepin.
I was like, just pick somebody.
Jacques Pepin. I'm going to say Jacques Pepin.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
By default, Thomas Keller.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good one. What are you reading right now?
Oh, there we go. The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. That is, it's actually my second read on it.
That's a good book. That's the Marie Kondo, how to like organize your
life.
Organize your life by organizing your closets.
Your closet, yeah.
You're going to laugh. I'm actually rereading it. I just reread it because I just came back traveling from China. I reread The Devil in the Kitchen, Mark Pirawai.
Oh, that's so funny. I was talking. Why was I? Oh, I interviewed Curtis Stone, who worked for Marco Pirawai, which a lot of people don't realize. And I actually have White Heat, the cookbook, in my apartment. And if you haven't looked at that cookbook, everybody needs to find a copy of it.
Yeah. Have it.
It's bonkers. Yeah. I mean, he is so ballsy and just so confident. You've kind of never seen a cookbook like this.
Yeah, I feel like it's been years.
It's like classic read.
It's worth hunting it down. Yeah. It's probably so expensive, but it's worth hunting it down and at least flipping through it. Okay, last question. If you could cook for one person, dead, alive, fictional, who would it be?
My grandmother.
Oh.
Hands down, because she passed away when I was 11, and
aww.
Like she's my role model, and I feel like I would love her to see who I became. So,
what would you make her?
I will actually make her traditional set of dinner. So it will always be a soup, a steamed fish, two seasonal dishes, and a starch. It's the same meal that she always loved.
And Brooke, how about you?
I feel like I always say this, but it's true. It's the same question, same answer. My son. I really enjoy cooking for my child. Even if he doesn't like what I'm making him. and I generally let him choose. So I don't have a meal because I always let him to tell me what he wants.
Lava cakes.
I would say it's usually either sushi or cacio e pepe, which I think I've got him hooked on, and lava cake, which I actually hate making, but the fact that I'm making it for him makes it okay.
Well, when you're 9, a lava cake is so magical.
It's the most magical thing on earth.
Well, that is it for today's show, sadly. It's been so much fun talking to you both. So, Brooke and Shirley, good luck tonight.
Thank you.
You two are doing a really good job because I'm like, okay, I'm going to be able to figure out who won, and I have no idea.
Really?
I have no idea. No,
have you ever figured out before?
Well, I've never interviewed the two Top Chef finalists before. Okay. So, anyway.
Girls rule.
Yeah.
Good luck. I wish they could name you both. You obviously both deserve it, and it's nice to see that you're friendly and laughing and a support system for each other.
Absolutely.
So, we look forward to watching tonight. Everybody should tune in and see the finale. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Dave Tatasciore, and much love to Kerrygold for making this season of Radio Cherry Bomb possible. Kerrygold butter is made in Ireland with milk from grass-fed cows. It's a taste that says a thousand words. Thank you for listening, everyone. You're the bomb.
Hi, it's Jane Larkworthy, the fraud behind the Fraudulent Chef food blog. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. And you know who I think is the bomb? April Bloomfield, for putting Salvation Burger in my neighborhood. Thank you.